One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Football, fighting, and full-on nonsense. The Stephen Housen Podcast. Made in Manchester.
Good evening, everybody. Today, I am joined by the wonderful and definitely crooked Loz from the Football Republic. And if you want to know what I mean by crooked, go and watch any video where he's done the true Geordie has to go face-to-face with anybody. And that's what I mean by crooked.
Right. I was wondering what you were talking about, because I thought, how does he know that? That was my only issue. Hi, how you doing?
So, Loz, from the Front Free podcast, which is one of... There's maybe four or five podcasts, which whenever it's released, I listen to it immediately. And that's the Joe Rogan podcast, the Bill Burr podcast, Joey Diaz, and the Front Free. You are in an elite... And I'm not just saying that. That is one of the only podcasts that I've got about 18, 19 podcasts that I've got on my phone, but there's only maybe a handful that I listen to immediately on upload. Brushing my teeth or anything, the Front Free are on. And Lawrence is the one that I shake my head at the most. How are you doing, mate?
Good, thank you. I can't believe it's not Dave that you don't shake your head at the most. You two tend to clash about United.
I do shake my head at Dave. I think it might have been Dave which made me decide to start taking notes when I listen to the Front Free, to be honest. Just so I can bring them back up at a later date with some of the daft shit that him and you say. You're obviously a Liverpool fan, so...
Yeah,
there's plenty that I'm going to clash with a Liverpool fan on, just fundamentally. But yeah, I probably would disagree with Adam if he actually spoke more. He just seems to orchestrate a little bit, doesn't he?
He's a puppet master. He's a puppet master, but he's an opinionated puppet master. He sort of steers it in the right direction. Like I always think, a good host is someone you won't notice. Kind of,
it's like a referee, isn't it? You want him to be the grey man, but with a sexier voice.
Oh. There isn't a voice that I like to hear more than Adam's voice in podcasts anyway. I mean, it would be unusual if that was in general life, but yeah. I do find that quite interesting though, because for instance, since you and I have started doing things like Football Republic and those kind of things, obviously it's meant that I've sort of had to consider United opinion a lot more, because a few years ago when I started my I guess like this element bubble of a career, like 2009, and just used to clash with United fans all the time. And then over the past few years, like, I've really sort of worked up an appreciation and sort of listened to them and sort of, I don't know, I feel like a bit more of an affinity with United. I've been to Old Trafford three times this season, and each time it was just, I mean, granted, I was in a box every time. I think one time it was your box, but like every time I was like, these people are lovely. You know, the stadium is lovely. The atmosphere within the stadium was incredible. It was one of the best atmospheres I've ever been in at a stadium. And then, you know, the staff are beautiful people too. So I like United. If anything, I sort of feel like we should be standing shoulder to shoulder, you know?
Oh, my God. There's Liverpool fans listening to this just headbutting tables and all sorts of stuff. Like, what are you talking about, Lawrence?
I mean, when it comes down to a match, I'll always hate losing to United. Like, I remember just being so upset when, I think, was it Rio Ferdinand, like, headed home one season?
Yeah.
Like, very last minute.
That was cornrow Rio Ferdinand as well.
That was one of the most upsetting football experiences, just because it sort of really deflated my absolute belief in that Liverpool side. And then, politically, I think Liverpool and United fans have got a lot to share, in the modern age at least.
They do. One thing that I found in the army is that you go in and everyone's very partisan about where they're from, because that's all they've got really when they arrive. And you see people sort of quickly group together, and Manx and Scousers generally do flock together, unless there's a large group of Manx and a large group of Scousers, and then it's oil and water time.
Yeah.
But if there's only maybe a Manx and a Scouser, best buds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I do think that there is some sort of shared affinity and mutual respect, I think you can say. Probably there's absolutely no love at all, but there's definitely mutual respect, because obviously we've seen you guys go and dominate. And the reason why the rivalry's so fierce is because it's fucking down to jealousy, and it's both ways. We was jealous of your success pre-Premier League era, and I'm pretty sure that you lot have been jealous of our success post-Premier League era. And I think that's boils down to. The rivalry over how many trophies we've won. First it was 18, now it's 18 versus 20. You've still got the European Cup one over us, and now people are getting down to counting how many fucking Charity Shields and League Cups are split between the two of us. It's as fierce as a rivalry can possibly get. With the two biggest clubs in England, that's the way I would want it to be. I wouldn't want it to be where it's like, Bayern Munich, how many titles you won? Like 40 something titles. Like, what's the nearest one? About 10.
It just doesn't feel... It's not the same, is it? Like, I guess when you... jealousy sort of, it shows something. You know, you're not jealous for no reason. Like, I think jealousy isn't, it doesn't just sort of erupt out of nowhere. Everyone's jealous because there's a little bit of what's going on in that person's life that you want.
If you offered United the opportunity to get six Champions Leagues now, or, to be on six, another three Champions Leagues, people would give you their firstborn children, I think, to get ahead of Liverpool. And if that ever becomes a thing where we manage to overtake Liverpool's Champions League wins, and I know that that's going to be such an enormous thing made out of that. Such an enormous thing made out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine it's tied for five each, and we play each other in a Champions League final? Can you fucking imagine what that would be like?
I do think... obviously I don't wish... that United weren't. What I really wanted was that United would get back into the Champions League, and so would Liverpool, because obviously in the modern market, it's less like that's the weird thing, right? Is you and I are obviously talking about our local rivalry, but in the Champions League, it's England against everyone else, and I love watching United in the Champions League because there's something that stirs.
I can't agree on that. I know there's a lot of United fans feel the same way, that we just go. No, United, and that's it. I want to watch Arsenal crash out. I want to watch City crash out. I want to watch
Specifically, it's United. I don't particularly enjoy watching Chelsea. I don't particularly enjoy Arsenal, obviously, when they were very, very pretty, but they're not as pretty anymore. It's not as pleasurable. They don't seem to have as much of an MO. But and obviously now with Mourinho back, that is going to be a fascinating journey for you guys.
It's already started, hasn't it? The Pep versus Mourinho, it's going to be... Who go? I can already see it. They're going to run out of stuff to talk about in terms of transfers. So it's going to be like, if we've obviously just spoke about Aubameyang is supposedly a target for City. So that's going to be either he binned off Mourinho and United and went to Pep. They're already putting everything head to head. By the end of the season, the Manchester Evening News is going to have put that many head to heads together that they'll be talking about who goes to which restaurant the more, so who it belongs to whichever manager. It's going to be absolutely nuts. The Manchester Derby next season is going to be so exciting. The whole Premier League. I've been talking about Ryan Giggs quite a bit this last week or so as we try and figure out what's going to happen with him. And I don't know if I would go to be a Premier League manager if I was anyone, let alone Ryan Giggs, because there's that much talent in terms of managers in the Premier League. There's not enough success for them guys, let alone anybody new trying to cut their teeth. No one's going to get success next year except those top managers. You're best off going to the Championship, I think, if you're a new manager. I really would not even bother. It's just like, jumping in with the Lions and trying to fight them. You might as well just let them kill each other and then try and get the wounded ones at the end, I reckon.
But also, I suppose you can look at that number of ways. Like, for me, I think, I don't know if you heard this episode of the podcast, but on the front three, Dave was sort of saying he wanted to see, Dave's a United fan, he wanted to see Giggs leave United and go cut his teeth somewhere else. Hmm. And my argument was sort of, well, what's the rush? The guy's still relatively young in football terms. He's been around some great managers in his time. And certainly, the people who stand alongside Mourinho always come away with great experience. And having seen, man motivation, at what Mourinho does, how he does it up close, is always, for me, I think that would be so much better teeth cutting or, experience than going to the Championship at the moment. Until Mourinho leaves.
I can understand what you're saying. It's another bit of on-the-job training for him if he looks at how Mourinho does it. And then he's deepening his experience, because at the moment he's got a lot of experience, but it's extremely narrow. It's at one club. You know, he's not hopped around Europe. He's not even played for any other teams in Europe to see what it might look like in a different sense. I believe Paddy Evra is saying if he was still at United, he'd retired by now, but the way it's done in Juventus, he loves it. He feels fresher than he ever has done, and he thinks he can go on for another couple of years. So there's other perspectives to be had.
That is definitely an interesting way of talking about what Patrice said. That would raise a few eyebrows if someone said that in England.
But it's sort of gone under the radar a little bit. But Giggs doesn't have any experience to compare it against. Now, he's had Sir Alex Ferguson, but we don't know how much conversation he was having about how to manage a team with him. You know, he might have just turned up, trained and buggered off home. We don't know who he was having, here's how you do this sort of mentoring conversations. He probably did with David Moyes because he's part of the coaching staff, and he probably has under Louis van Gaal. But at some point, he needs to stop doing the theory and he needs to go and do the practical side of what this job entails. And that, I would like the clamour for Ryan Giggs to be on the back of him actually achieving something rather than this romantic idea that because he's a class of 92 boy, he can replicate what Fergie did. It didn't work out for Wilf McGuinness with Sir Matt Busby, and I don't think it'll work out for Ryan Giggs. He's got to go and prove it for me.
Well, what about the idea that Mourinho, there's probably no one better to pass on knowledge than Mourinho, because, you know, Mourinho was the assistant manager for quite a while, if even that. I suppose it very much comes down to the man, and I don't actually know enough about Giggs to sort of work out how observant he is.
His eyes
are quite, like, his eyes on the bench are emotive eyes. Do you know what I mean? You sort of see, when you look at him, you look at him and you're like, oh, you're having a hard time with this. Mm. And, you know, I can sort of relate to that, you know, but you sort of wonder, what was his position within the club? Because as far as I was concerned, I think he was somewhat used as like a bit of a body shield to take bullets sometimes. It's sort of like, well, don't shoot me because I'm next to him.
It's a weird one. He's obviously a darling of the board. He's a darling of the fans for obvious reasons. He's a person that you... For me, he's a person that should be having a statue outside Old Trafford. And his foray into management is only going to diminish that reputation, I think. Because unless he is another Ferguson, he's going to have failed as a manager, I think. Unless he's of that ilk, he's going to have failed as a manager. And I think the chances of him being that good as a manager... I mean, it's his career, he can do what he wants. I think it's a massive risk because he's shown nothing. You know, he had a completely average record in the four games he took over, and you can't really use that as a barometer, but that literally is all we've got. He had a 50% win ratio, won two, lost one, drew one in four matches.
With a team that wasn't his own or any of that. I mean, you know, Klopp's had that for an entire half season, you know, almost an entire season now. It's not his own team, it's not his own team, sort of constantly given to him. So why not do the same for Giggs?
I think he's just got to prove it. I think he's got to go and prove it. If he went to Bolton, if he went to a Championship side, I think Villa with new owners might be a decent opportunity. A club steeped in history that's got a decent youth system that, you know, we assume he would like to use. We have no idea. He might be a Galactico manager. There's too many questions about him to give him the reins of Manchester United.
Do you ever wonder if the United badge sort of limits? I don't mean it like you guys are a negative influence, but do you ever think people sort of think he's not going to be the kind of manager that fans will always gravitate behind because of his, you know, the public nature of some of the things that have happened in his life, and also the fact that United are, because of their success, a bit of a disliked club in England? What I would like is all the time just people talking about, what does this mean for Ryan Giggs? And I guess I'd sort of, as a fan, be like, no, what does this mean for me? Like, obviously, I care more for me. I don't want the show to be around Giggs and what, you know, his long narrative with Manchester United. I want it to be around, you know, Bolton or whoever else it is. I don't want it to just be, Ryan, what are you going to do? What are you taking from here to apply to your next job? You know?
I think that's the problem, that he's got this crown, you know, almost placed upon his head. And if he does go elsewhere, he's going to be constantly evaluated for a job that he might not even want. We can assume he wants the United job, but he might not really want the job. He might in his head think, I need to get 4 or 5 years experience, and then I can think about that. There's a ton of other ex-players that should be in line in front of him, but if you suggest them, people go absolutely fucking mental about it. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Mark Hughes. These are ex-players that have got the Fergie way in them. Brian Robson, you know, he's been out of the game for a long time, but he's still achieved more. Steve Bruce has achieved more with shite teams. So there's ex-players out there that have done more, you know, way more than Ryan Giggs has done as a manager. But people will absolutely laugh in your face if you suggest them. But why is Ryan Giggs with 4 matches experience suddenly qualified to do this? It's such a strange thing, and I know it's romantic, and Sam Homewood had a really good, you know, monologue on it where he was like, football is romantic, so I'm happy for us to have a go at something that might be romantic like this. And I was like,
I've heard Giggs is very romantic.
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah, but that is part of it, though, isn't it? Is that, you know, for instance, like I've read The Damned United, and I'm currently reading Red or Dead, which is the Bill Shankly story, and you know, I read a really good book about the comparisons between Ferguson and Bill Shankly, and you know how Ferguson really looked up to him, and you know how influentially essentially was. That's not me trying to take any credit for any of those titles, but. You know, but for me, this is a, how many of those managers, I think Mourinho very much came to England with a very fixed way that people look at him. I think Giggs is a very sort of mysterious character in the press. He doesn't say very much. He's a man of very few words. He's obviously not got a gleaming record. And there doesn't seem to be much evidence over what he's actually learned so far. So I feel like a lot of it's just sort of speculation and what people want. And that's where I come to the question with you, is when you comment on these things, are you sort of commenting from a personal perspective, or do you consider yourself to be more neutral? Like, you know, are you sort of the United fan that's kind of like the greater good, you know, I'll always see the bigger picture? Or is it literally that, you know, you just want to see success no matter what, and you don't care what happens to United's name or any of those sort of things?
I would like to think I always try and go for the bigger picture stuff. Someone would probably tell me I'm wrong on that. I don't know, in all honesty. It's hard to be objective, and you need the hindsight to know what was the good decision at the time. And I don't know if you can do that. I like to generally argue for reason and logic a lot more. And people see that usually as too black or white. Like, people will go, Fellaini was fucking amazing. I'll go, it wasn't amazing. It was like above average. I'm going to give him like a 6.8 or something, you know. And because I say I don't think Fellaini was amazing, people are like, you fucking hate him. And it's far too black and white with people. And I think everything is shades of grey. Like, I've seen people, Mourinho guarantees trophies, Guardiola guarantees trophies. Guess what? No one guarantees trophies. They could put me and you in charge of a club, and we guarantee as much as anybody else guarantees.
Well, I would guarantee you a trophy. But
I would be fucking phenomenal.
Do you think, I've seen you on Football Manager, I mean, that's the thing, is that, do you worry a little bit that Mourinho and Guardiola cancel each other out?
Nah. I think Mourinho had the great quote, which was somewhat along the lines of, if Guardiola concentrates on me, he's going to lose the league. There's more people at play in this. I think he said something along those lines.
I mean, that is pretty fascinating, because you've got characters like Klopp. I imagine that Klopp won't get embroiled in a war of words, especially not with someone like Mourinho. I think Klopp likes to be liked.
I actually don't know enough about Klopp to comment on that in terms of what he's done in Germany or anything like that. I've never known if he's been involved in a spat. He seems to me the kind of guy that you could wind up face to face. I don't think you could wind him up through the press, but I think you could wind him up on the sideline. Mourinho could, you know, throw a couple of gestures at him in the middle of a game and make him lose his cool, but I don't think you could do it through the press. I think he's far too chilled for that.
Yeah, and I also think that that's quite fascinating, in that Klopp is a manager who says he likes to play with heart, and he likes to get angry, and he likes to get mixed up in those things. So you almost think, you know, would it be better for Mourinho to play the Iceman and just sort of chill the whole affair out? You don't want to get him wound up, because if his players see him wound up, then they realise there's something more to play for.
I don't know. Imagine Mourinho, United Liverpool at Anfield next year, and Mourinho's playing the Iceman and has said something off the cuff, under his breath, standing next to Klopp, and just fucking sends Klopp into a psychopathic rage. Can you imagine the reaction of the crowd? Can you imagine the reaction of the players? You don't know how it's going to go, especially in derbies like that. It can go one way or the other. It can mean that you go on and win the game, or you just fall to fucking pieces. And I think you're completely flipping a coin in which way it will go. It's just going to be fascinating. I think that's the only thing we can definitely know for sure. The whole season, what Conte is going to do, what Klopp's going to do, what fucking Koeman could do at Everton if that's where he's definitely going.
I think he is going there. I think that is a pretty fascinating combination, because that's a club that's been yearning for a manager of that sort of ilk for a while. And, you know, they've got, you know, Everton, a club of great history, et cetera, a great kit. All those kind of, they've got everything, the makings of a massive side.
They've got a great spine in the team, and they've got some real potential going through. Yeah. If you look at Lukaku, Barkley and Stones, I think he's a little bit overrated, but he's still a very good player. I just don't think he's of the level people are making him out to be.
He's definitely got, I mean, there's always potential there. You know, he's a young centre-back. I just don't think he's not shown maybe what some other greats have shown by this stage. But then you could argue that's because he's at Everton under, you know, some mediocre managers. I don't know.
I think Everton's a club that could go on and do well. They've got new investment in their owners. The ground's a complete fucking dump. It's got charm to it, but it's a fucking dump. That could all be renovated and sorted out. I mean, I don't know what
They're building a super stadio, apparently.
Is this going to be in the park?
It probably would be in Stanley Park. But, I mean, you know, getting planning permission and those sort of things does seem to be quite an issue in Liverpool.
Let's take a left turn, actually. Didn't we, before we started, we was going to talk about vlogging and we was going to talk about technology and shit like that, because we're both obviously in this world. But you've just said something which made me just jump out of something.
Let's go to the park.
Let's fuck it all off and go play in the park in the dark and get bit by mosquitoes.
I love that.
I was speaking to my father-in-law on Sunday. We had a barbecue at ours. And I'm doing something on the history of football in Manchester. And he pulled up a brilliant point. Yeah. He watches a lot of non-league. He's a City fan, but he's all right.
Poor guy.
He actually doesn't go to the Etihad, which is like, you know, most City fans. But he goes and watches New Mills, Glossop, Staley Bridge. And anywhere that's got like a capacity of about 1,300 is there for you. And he said to us, like, Greater Manchester's got this wealth of teams. So many non-league, like, tiers 5 to 9 teams. Like, there's like 20 teams at that level. But Liverpool doesn't have that, considering it is a hotbed of football. They've got Marine, Tranmere, Liverpool and Everton.
Yeah. I mean, you could sort of say that down the years, those guys have sort of sucked everyone in, if you like.
Possibly. But just in the area of Manchester, I live in Tameside, and in Tameside we've got Drawsden, Hyde, Mosley, 2 Ashtons, Glossop, there's tons. FC United's around the corner, Salford's just on the other side of the city, we've got Flixton, and there literally is 25 or so teams, which is, it feels like a hotbed of football there anyway. The local junior leagues are fantastically well run. I see the Save Grassroots Football campaign on Twitter all the time.
Yeah.
And I can't ever really get behind it, because I'm like, I'm not seeing the sort of things that you say that's going on here, which I know is fucking a bit elitist, but the East Manchester Junior Football League, I have to take my hat off to them. It's a central league. It's all played on 3G. The kids just turn up to the same place every week and play a different team. So you're not home away playing on a massive pitch and a small pitch and a dog shit alley pitch. And there's always referees there. It's fucking phenomenally well run. And I don't see that when I go look at things elsewhere around the place. It's fucking crazy.
Well, I suppose there are different ways of doing it, I suppose, aren't there? I mean, you know, I was talking to some Leicester fans, and they run the team that Lineker had come through, and they were very confident about some other young players, and you know, they had a grassroots league. But I think then it's partly like the way that different cities are built and the sort of you know, the institutions within them. And I think, you know, that there's also down to the development of certain cities, if you like. So I think Manchester definitely was built up at the right time, because it was very clear that as the second city, it was either going to be Manchester or Birmingham, wasn't it? And, you know, Manchester was essentially one of those chosen cities in the north that wasn't annexed. And I think, you know, Liverpool has more recently been through a time which I think has taken it backwards as opposed to taking it forwards.
But you'd think that things like junior football clubs, they're run on a shoestring, they're run by volunteers and stuff like that. And you think of the areas, you know, the likes of Rooney and Carragher and Gerrard and that have come from, you'd think that would spawn more, you know, tier six, you know, Conference North, Northwest Counties level sides, but it doesn't.
Maybe,
I mean,
but do you, I mean, do you see? I don't live in Liverpool anymore, so I can't claim to sort of have like my ear to the ground. But obviously, I've got family there, and you know, young family members who sort of go to play football every weekend, and you know, they're obviously part of things. But I do also think Manchester is definitely not a part of the establishment, but it's definitely been a city which feels much more at ease when talking with the establishment. I don't know if that makes sense to people who don't come from England, but for me, I think Manchester is quite a confident city. It's a city where there's an element of swagger to it. I don't think that Liverpool embodies the same kind of swagger that Manchester has. I think for that reason, you know, Manchester's always sort of been like, right, we can engage with the establishment, but we'll do it in our own way. Mm. And the establishment's always kind of like that, but also always kind of felt a bit uncomfortable. And Manchester makes London feel a bit uncomfortable. Whereas with Liverpool is, I mean, you know, it's built on almost being anti-establishment because of what happened. So Manchester sort of Manchester became the, you know, the better son of London, if you like, because it built the ship canal. It went beyond Liverpool, and Liverpool sort of felt like the spurned one and was sort of like, right, fuck that, we're gonna make our own way. And so maybe there's less of a, I mean, you know, I'm drawing massive lines, but maybe there's less of a clamoring to be part of that league system. Maybe there's less of a clamoring to be like, right, we need to prove to everyone else. It's a much more, I think Liverpool's a very inward looking city, whereas I think Manchester is, as you know, as much as it's got a lovely community there, it is also quite an outward looking place. I think Liverpool definitely has a different feel to it, a different mentality, that I think Manchester and Liverpool are definitely at odds there, you know. And that was totally embodied by what happened at the beginning of the Premier League.
Yeah, arguably, yeah.
Obviously I'm drawing massive lines, but Liverpool fans back in the day used to absolutely rinse United for being like, you guys sold out, you know, all this. But at the same time, that was the biggest blind of Liverpool Football Club, was that they didn't sell out or not. They didn't sell their product and their idea fast enough because, well, essentially, you know, it was post-Hillsborough. That was a sort of a dark time for Liverpool. But, you know, the biggest problem was that Liverpool fans would say, how come United can buy all these players and get all these guys in and we're not doing that? But at the same time, they'd sort of, you know, have a load of banter with United fans for them sort of buying all the big guys. So there was... you know, there's a bit of disjunction there, I guess. And I think Liverpool's only just coming out of that.
To take another left turn in that, it's the Manchester Festival next weekend, 19th, I think it is.
What is that?
To be honest, I don't really know. I've been to it a couple of times. There's a few street parades, and there's generally, like, a load of events on in the city which are generally quite dull and quite... they are, let's be honest, they're not a fucking amazing, are they? They're not like they've had Danny Boyle in to fucking direct anything. You know, they're homemade sort of feel to them. But there's something that I follow Manchester Histories on Facebook, which is a good Facebook page. And that's a great Facebook page. And I love Manchester history. And I also love that we fucking ruined Liverpool throughout history. We invented the train to take fucking stuff to the port quicker. We invented the ship canal to cut Liverpool out of it, essentially. There's so many firsts that have come up through Manchester.
Are you claiming that Manchester invented the ship canal?
No, sorry, we didn't invent the ship canal. We created our ship canal to basically circumnavigate paying high warehouse costs in Liverpool.
Yeah.
There's tons of great things that have happened in Manchester. I love the history of Manchester. I love that cities have personalities, which is mad to think about how 200,000-300,000 people can have a shared personality.
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts.
Well, I don't know how technical you want to get, but I mean, if you go to a new city, you will still be walking. So for instance, say if you and I, so say you flew to London right now and I flew to Manchester at 12 o'clock in the middle of the day.
Oh, is this a math question?
No, no, no. Like,
if I'm traveling at 80 mile an hour,
what would happen? No, but the point would be that if you got off the plane, you would still be walking at, in inverted commas, Manchester speed, and I would still be walking at London speed, and completely out of our own control throughout the day, we will adjust to walk at the speed that that city walks.
I've heard about that, the speed of people walking. I've seen an experiment about that, and it was more, I don't think Manchester to London would be obvious enough. I think it's like, you know, London to, I don't know, a fucking three-house village.
Yeah.
I find that fascinating. But I notice it. I do notice it when I get on the tube and stuff. I walk a lot slower than the average Londoner, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's the Mancunian swagger, because my toes are pointing at 10 and 2 and I have to rock from side to side a little bit.
your genes, like, that's what I always say, is if you're standing in central London, you can tell who's local and who's foreign, because the northern guy's genes will be, I'd say, a little looser, and London guy's genes are just tight. They're just fitted.
It's fucking accurate.
you could look around a room. I'll look around a room and you'll go, you're not from London, you're not from London. You're not. And the main reason I think I spot it is because at one point my genes were a lot looser than they are now.
What a fucking mad observation that is. But it's accurate. It's completely fucking accurate. And even just thinking, yeah. And I do end up having to pull my fucking pants up all the time because I'm walking faster in London. I'll give London its props, actually. I think the tube's fucking brilliant, and I think it would bankrupt the country if someone had to build it today. But the tube's a fantastic thing. You are literally 200-300 metres away from every fucking place in London with it, aren't you? It's magic.
I actually think the weird thing about the tube is it sort of changes time in a city, because I sort of have a GTA idea, and I'm always saying to my girlfriend, you know, we'll be there in 10 minutes. And like an hour later, what feels like, you know, just 10 minutes later to me, you're there. But like, everything is a lot closer because of the tube. You know, I guess that is also a problem with our generation, is we play GTA, so I think I can get anywhere in a city within about 5 minutes if I like go outside, knock a guy off his bike, and I'm 5 minutes down the road. But you know, you get what I mean, though. And I agree. I think the tube's fantastic. Although we were in where do we go this week, to Lisbon, and walked everywhere, and it was great.
Yeah, I don't like walking. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm a little overweight, and I do not like walking. Stevie does not do walking at all. I do moaning. I'm really good at fucking moaning.
Moaning whilst walking.
Yeah.
I've noticed that from your channel style, is you are good at moaning.
Really? Do you think I moan a lot?
No, but I definitely think, you know what I do think, is you have a different tone to everyone else on any United channel. And I think... I think by the very tone of a Mancunian accent, the moaning can be sort of accentuated, because it's quite a sort of, you know, like, it's sort of, there's some quite long words in there.
I don't hear it.
If you go to Liverpool or you go to London, there's a lot more, the words are shorter and they come out faster. And that's another thing about cities. If you go to cities, you'll also see the words coming out quicker. And I wonder, do you, like, I don't know. So back in the day, I've got my best friend for life. We used to play Xbox Live. And I'm one of those people that if you talk to me for, you know, 10 minutes, I'll begin to mimic your accent.
Fucking hell.
So, but just completely, you know, no, I'm not standing there sort of thinking, right, I'm going to take the piss. I'm literally like, right, I'm going to do your accent. And, you know, I just somehow start doing it. And we used to play guys from LA, we used to play guys from Houston, we used to play all these guys. And we'd start off like, oh, good afternoon, how are you? Oh, great, let's play. And we'd play like Xbox and, you know, play NBA Live and all these kind of things. Actually, no, not NBA Live, it was NBA 2K5. NBA Live was not a good game at that time. And by the end of the game, I'd be like, yeah, man, cool, right, see you later, don't worry about it, man, cool, whatever, yeah, cool, right, bye. And my friend would be like, the hell happened to you?
My accent softened through 7 years in the army, when you just mashed with people from Norwich and Scottish people and fucking Southerners and people from Portsmouth, and your accent definitely softens. I heard myself on a video from 2005 at FC United, and I don't know what the interview question was. I think it was like, sum something up in one word, and I said party, and I was, when I heard it back, I was like, Fucking hell. Was I on Shameless?
You're just like Bez. Basically.
Jesus. Yeah, I might as well have had a tambourine and a maraca and been fucking jumping up and down. And like, did I actually really talk like that? But that was only after maybe 18 months or so in the army, 2 years in the army. 7 years down the line, I think my accent softened loads, although people
still
tell me.
How long were you in the army for?
7 years I did.
Wow. So that's such a long... For me, that sounds like such a long time to be in any career. Like, I've only ever shot things with the army, so we've obviously gone to barracks and stuff. And in that day, I 100%... I mean, you can probably tell from... if you watch me on YouTube or whatever, I imagine anyone can be shaped to be in the army. But, it sort of takes a certain kind of person, I think, to be in the army, interact with the army, those kind of things. And I, a couple of days there was sort of enough for me. Obviously, I enjoy the fitness side and those other things, but I just, maybe I'm just too settled or too comfortable. Maybe a bit of tiny army would do me a bit of good. But 7 years to me sounds like such a long time. How many different places did you end up in that time?
Fucking hell. Well, I did 3 operational tours. I did Afghanistan twice and Iraq once.
Okay.
But I don't know how many places I ended up. I did 16 weeks away skiing for my regimental team, which was that was the thing I joined the army for, right? I had an uncle who did years in the army.
Yeah.
And I was a professional rugby player. I got released from my contract by Salford, and he was like, just join the army. You just fucking play rugby all the time. And I was like, I'll just fucking join the army and play rugby all the time then, shall I? I joined the army, and Iraq kicked off. Guess what?
Wow.
I played about fucking 12 games of rugby in 7 years. So, yeah, that fucking got shit canned. But he did tell me, when you get in, you'll have the opportunity to do loads of sports. Put your fucking hand up for every sport. So I was like, there was a memo went round and said, who'd like to try Nordic skiing? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. What is it? Never done it before. Never skied in my life. Went to Norway for 6 weeks, where they basically taught us how to ski. It's skiing and shooting. You'll do like 20, 30 kilometres at a time. I fucking loved it. And then in our days off, I taught myself to snowboard. So I managed to get like a whole fucking winter package, and it's free. My full salary is being paid for the entire time I'm there. I'm actually getting extra for being there because it's classed as an exercise.
Wow.
Came home for Christmas leave, went back out, and we went to Germany, Austria, Italy, and France, competing in the army ski championships. And some of the places that was like Serre Chevalier in France, which is like a beaver or Magaluf on snow. And we were just getting fucking wrecked, and then skiing in the next day. And there's people like the Olympic team competing that, to get a bit of competition and stuff. And I'm fucking skiing alongside people that are going to the Winter Olympics. They're overtaking me, but no, I'm fucking skiing along here with people. I have no right to be here whatsoever, but you know what? I'm fucking loving it. And that was what my first year and a half was like. And then I ended up fucking bouncing back from desert to desert, did desert training, was in Oman, spent a couple of months on HMS Ocean. That was angry. I wanted to kill myself every single day that was there. That was horrible. I'd rather go to prison than have to spend any time on a boat.
So why?
Well, the Apache helicopter is what I worked with. I was ground crew for the Apache helicopter.
Okay.
Loaded the missiles and guns and all the rest, bullets and stuff added to it. And the Apache went through something called CTR, which is conversion to roll, which is essentially like an NVQ for a bit of kit, where it has to just tick a load of boxes. Yeah. One of the boxes that needed to be ticked was we had to prove maritime capability. Okay. So we had to go and fucking live on a boat and do everything that the Navy, like, loady type dudes did for the Apache. And it was fucking horrible. Like, it would take 4 or 5 hours to get the Apache from below deck onto the deck, ready to go and fly. So if they wanted to go and do a little operation somewhere, we had to be doing that, like, fucking 7 hours before it needed to do it. So it's a full day's work just to get it to go and fly somewhere. It was it was horrible.
I mean, that's and obviously living on a boat is a completely different lifestyle, isn't it?
It was hanging. I had a bed which was a slightly bit wider than an ironing board, and my stuff, like in the army, you get to spread out quite a bit with all the kit. We have a lot of kit as well. All my kit had to fit on my bed, so I would get out of my bed, put all my kit on the bed. While I'm in my bed, my kit's on the floor, and then I have to strap all the shit to my bed. And then go and do whatever we had to do. And it was one point we came round Cornwall and Devon, and the HMS Ocean was the largest ship in the army. It was like 20,000 tons or some shit, like, not in the army, in the Navy even.
Wow.
It's like 20,000 tons. Can you imagine how big a fucking wave needs to be to get that thing moving? I was walking down a corridor, and I reckon I got about 3 seconds airtime, just as I was mid-stride, just as a wave hit. and I sort of went up, down, up again, and then fucking smashed into a wall. Like, wow. What the fuck was that? And yeah. We just turned the corner near Cornwall and turned right to go up towards Ireland, and the meeting of the two seas just fucking hit us side on and just sent the ship going rocking. I'm like, oh, fuck this. This is ridiculous.
Which also makes you realise how powerful the sea is.
Oh, God, yeah. I also thought I walked off the fucking the flight deck at one point as well, because we were doing refueling in the middle of the night and it's pitch black. There's literally not a fucking light on the thing. Yeah. And I'm walking towards where I think some steps are, and I just stepped off, and I thought I'd stepped off the whole boat, and that was me going into the sea. And all I'd done is I just stepped into a little fucking, I don't know what the fucking hell you'd call it. There's like a little metal grid about 3 feet below me. But for that half a second where I was falling, I was like, I'm dead. That's it, I'm over. And then fucking crashed in, smashed my knee on the floor and everything. I was like...
Because, I mean, you would literally be dead, though. Like, you know, what... You know, the big chances you get sucked under the ship, right? If you're...
Well, that was in the North Sea, so I wouldn't have lasted long. Whenever we flew out off the boat, the ship, I'll call it a boat actually, because that'll really annoy anyone who's been in the Navy.
Okay.
So we'll call it a boat. Whenever you flew out to go and do anything, we had to put these fucking noddy suits on, these immersion suits, which is meant to like mean that you can live if you fall into the North Sea. And I was just in a pair of overalls. That'd have lasted, what, 5-6 minutes or something before I fucking packed up.
Jeez. And so then you came back out on City Street and
started blogging.
And did you go straight into that, or did you get a job?
No, I was doing TV installations, so like home cinema and stuff.
Okay.
For about a year. And then that company went tits up. So I then started doing scaffolding. And while I was doing the scaffolding, I started going to university as well to do quantity surveying, because I just sort of fell into it. I was like, this sounds like a sensible career.
Why not?
They're going to send me university. I'll do it. I ended up doing that for a few years, but hated it.
It's good money.
It's just Excel spreadsheets. It's fucking garbage. It literally might be the worst job in the fucking world. So I did that for a few years. And then in the meantime, I was blogging, and I got offered a job with Full Time Devils several times, turned it down several times, just because I was like, why would I give up the security of this to go and work on YouTube? But I did, and I do a few days a week with Full Time Devils, and I do MMA latest and stuff in the interim.
So was it the whole Kimbo Slice thing today?
Yes, that was kind of fucking wild. We've had a wild 48 hours actually. It's been
For fighters,
for the MMA world. It's been a mad 48 hours. We had, I don't know if you how much you follow MMA.
I see your retweets, and I sometimes click it because I'm like, that looks really fascinating.
Well, the MMA world has sort of rocked big time over a couple of things this week. One was Ariel Helwani getting banned by the UFC. That's, I'm trying to think of who he would be in terms of football. It's like Henry Winter being banned from Premier League games.
Okay.
It was like mind-boggling to people, like this could even fucking potentially happen.
Why banned?
Because he released Brock Lesnar was going to be fighting on UFC 200 before the UFC could, so they banned him. I think there's more to it. I think there's a lot more to it.
I was going to say, yeah, that sounds like the kind of thing where, yeah, there's got to be something behind the scenes, isn't there? I mean, journalists put a few noses out of joint, don't they?
Yeah, and he's saying, I'm just doing my job and this and that. That was one thing, and that sort of took a lot of the shine off the fact that Michael Bisping's just won the UFC title, becoming the first British fighter to be the UFC champion, which should be fucking back page news in the UK.
Really?
Because it's fucking huge. Yeah, the first one, we've never had one before. We've had Dan Hardy fight for a title in about 2010, 2011, but he got fucking smoked by GSP, and Michael Bisping's just become the first guy to, and massive underdog as well, huge underdog. Like, I didn't think he was standing a chance. But he is the UFC middleweight champion. First UK one we've had. It might lead to a defence in the UK. I hope it does, because then the UK press would really dive all over it in the way the UK press could only. But yeah, it's fucking crazy. We've had that. We've had Kimbo Slice down. We've had... what else have we had? Conor McGregor announcement that he's going to be fighting Nate Diaz at UFC 202. So he's not going to be fighting Floyd Mayweather in a fucking boxing match.
Who would win that?
Floyd Mayweather would win that.
Just because Floyd Mayweather is a trained, he's a natural boxer.
Well, I did a video on it this morning, actually, and what I said on that was, what I could see happening is that Conor could avoid getting knocked out, but like handily lose the fight on everyone's card, every round.
Because he's, because he's not, that he's not got the longevity of a boxer, essentially. He's a fighter.
Yeah, but he could avoid getting knocked out, and the way Conor is, and the way he thinks, and the way he speaks, he would get on the mic afterwards and say, I've come to your sport, you've not knocked me out, come to my sport, I'll put you away in fucking 30 seconds or some shit like that, because that's the way Conor McGregor would spin it, and he would still spin it almost into a win for himself, despite the fact he's just fucking lost. I could see that happening. Someone also suggested that they could see Conor McGregor going to the 12th round, halfway through the 12th round, just fucking kicking him in the head, knocking him out, and going, yeah, you might have won the fight, I might have got disqualified, but no, that's what happens when you fuck with a...
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.